Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Stacking the Box with NFL insider Matt Verderam and Mark Carman.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Stacking the Box. I am Matt Verderam, usually joined by Mark Carman, but he's deciding to continue to self-loathe at Chicago Bears OTAs today. It'll be the last show that he's not here for due to that. Good for him, and probably good for the Bears who get rid of Carm. But in the meantime, I'm here. I appreciate everybody who's joined me live here. Mike in Sweden, Gonzo, Lucas, you guys are here all the time, as you are, of course, on the Arrowhead Addict podcast, which goes up every Thursday if you're interested. But we do have a lot to get to. It is usually the time of the year where it's not very busy. It's June 14th, right? I mean, that is the dead period of the dead period in the NFL. We're a month away from the franchise tag deadline. We are 6 weeks away from training camp, but a lot of teams right now are going through mandatory mini camp. That is where if guys do decide not to show up, it becomes a real story. It becomes a holdout because they're getting fined for that, not like voluntary OTAs. So this is an interesting week. And then really we do go into full-blown hibernation. Of course, not right here on Stack in the Box. We'll be here every Tuesday. And what's up to Hefe in Oregon who joined the chat as well. Appreciate it. And all of you, of course, who will listen later on, wherever you may find the podcast, really do appreciate you listening in, especially this time of year. I know this is a time where, as I said, look, there's no games, there's no free agency, there's no draft. So you're the diehards of the diehards. To start with Tyreek Hill, there have been different clips that have been out there kind of making their way on the Twitter sphere. Mahomes is less accurate than Tua. Mahomes is going to have a tough time without him. The Chiefs, he felt, disrespected him by not giving him the contract that he felt he deserved, that Miami eventually did think I'm worth five picks, but they don't think I'm worth, eventually ended up getting, which was $30 million and over $70 million guaranteed. I did a spaces on this on Twitter yesterday, but I know all of you have lives and probably didn't get to hear any or all of it, and so I'm going to talk a little bit about it in a more of a nuanced way, I hope, here for the next few minutes. Tyreek Hill has every right to feel jilted by the Chiefs, okay? He has every right to feel like he's not getting the love that some of the other guys have gotten, okay? He's looking at it and saying, I'm sure, I mean, I'm not on a text thread with him, but I'm sure that he's sitting there and saying, look, Patrick Mahomes got $500 million. Chris Jones got paid. Travis Kelce got paid. Joe Tooney just got a fortune. Orlando Brown has not gotten paid yet, but also is in line to get a big payday, okay? Why didn't I get paid? Now, the argument could be you already got paid. You got paid 3 years and $60 million a couple of years ago, which was at the time top of the line, okay? It wasn't like it was some discount deal. He got a lot of money. The bottom line, though, is, and this has not been just reported by me, but it's been out there all over the place. He was in a position where he was going to sign an extension with Kansas City. They were moving towards that. The Davante Adams trade and then subsequent signing with the Raiders really changed the calculus. It became such that if Kansas City was going to, and they were going to have a third year, it became pretty obvious pretty quickly that was going to be a problem. The Chiefs could have played hardball with Tyreek Hill here. Okay, instead of doing what they did, which was trade him to Miami, the Chiefs could have said, you're going to make $21 million this year. Okay, we're not moving you. We're not moving you. You are going to play on that deal. And for those people who sit out there and say, well, he wouldn't have done that, he would have held out. No, he would not have. Under the new collective bargaining agreement, you are fined if you're under contract, which Tyreek Hill was, $50,000 a day, and it's non-refundable. The team cannot give back the fine. Used to be teams could fine you and fine you and fine you, and then you'd show up the last day of camp, and they would just hand back the fines, right? You can't do that anymore by the CBA. So the bottom line is he was not going to hold out. Maybe he would have held out for a week, too. I mean, he would not have held out for any meaningful amount of time, or he would have forfeited millions and millions of dollars, okay? Brett Veach could have very well said to him, if he wanted to, you're playing this season. At the end of the year, we can talk about an extension, or more likely, frankly, we're going to franchise tag you. And at that point, you cannot sign the tag. It can get ugly, or you can sign the tag, play the year out. Now you're 30 hitting free agency, and it's a hell of a lot different than being 28. The Chiefs did not do that. They went out, they sought offers, they got offers from the Dolphins and the Jets, and they left it up to Tyreek Hill, which one he wanted to take. They did nothing wrong by Tyreek Hill. They offered him, per my understanding, a lot of money in the first 2 years of the contract. They were not willing to go into a third year with major guarantees, and I don't blame them. As great as Tyreek Hill is, that's a huge risk going into your 30s with a receiver who's predicated on speed. And look, he's more than just speed. He's a great route runner. He's got he can get himself open better than anybody I think I've ever seen, maybe outside of Jerry Rice and Randy Moss, okay? But let's not pretend that the Chiefs just screwed him over. That's simply not true. And so I do think there is a little bit of bizarrity to this where he just keeps going at them. Look, he's allowed the human being. He really wanted to be there. And felt it didn't work out. And there was one thing he said in the podcast that I thought was interesting. He talked about the fact that when he was negotiating with Kansas City, trying to get a new deal, that he reached out to Patrick Mahomes. And basically, I'm paraphrasing, but hey, help get the deal done. Well, it didn't get done. And then after that, there was that talk about, hey, he's not as accurate as Tua and all this other, frankly, nonsense. Perhaps he feels like Mahomes didn't go the extra mile for him. Maybe he feels like Mahomes didn't really feel that he was as valuable as he is. I get it. If that's the feeling, maybe there's some bitterness there. Okay. I would also sit there and say, though, what are you that upset about? You're getting $30 million a year living on South Beach. Like, that's a pretty damn good deal. And you're on a team that, look, they're not the Chiefs, but they're good, right? I mean, the Dolphins have had a winning record each of the last 2 years. It's not as though you're stuck on some team that's terrible. It's not, and it was your choice to go there. You made that decision. So I don't know that you are really in a spot, if you're Tyreek Hill, where you should be upset. You got paid. Maybe you didn't get paid where you wanted to get paid. Maybe privately you would have preferred to stay in Kansas City and play with Patrick Mahomes. Didn't work out. It's the way it goes. But I honestly think there's a bitterness there. Just from reading the tea leaves, and I heard the same podcast you all heard, I think there's some feelings that maybe Mahomes didn't go the extra mile to get him signed. I can't tell you if that's true or if it's not. I've reached out to people around the Chiefs. Nobody's talking about this, and frankly, probably wisely, right? Like, why get into a war of words? Let Drew Rokel say what they will. Go win 13 games if you're the Chiefs and move on. I think long-term, it was probably a smart move by the Chiefs. Now, short-term, I think it's going to hurt them, okay? They can replace his numbers in the aggregate with guys like Juju Smith-Schuster and Marcus Valdez-Scantling and Sky Moore and maybe a little bit of an ascension from Mecole Hardman. But you're not going to replace the threat that Tyreek Hill is. Tyreek Hill changes the way teams defend you. That's not going to be the case with any of those other receivers I just mentioned, unless Sky Moore just turns out to be unbelievable. But I don't think you can count on that from a second-round rookie right off the bat. I do think this hurts the Chiefs this season.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I also believe that the Chiefs' season is largely going to come down to their defense and how well their younger kids play. And if their younger kids play well, I think they'll be just fine. But as for Hill, look, you're going to go to Miami now. And the one worry I would have if I'm a Dolphins fan, hell, if I'm part of the organization, he was very bitter, clearly bitter, about that he felt he should have been targeted more. He should have had more of a role in the offense. I wrote about this in Stacking the Box, the column on Monday. He was targeted 159 times last year, which ranked sixth in the league. If you go for the last 4 years, the duration of Mahomes' starting career, Hill, of any player that's played at least 55 games in that stretch, he ranks eighth in targets per games played. Everybody else on the list is far and away the best receiver on their team. Far and away. Okay. The only guy who's not far best receiver on their team, there's two of them on the list. Hill's one of them, and there's one other one. Travis Kelce. He's seventh. I mean, and they almost have the exact same number, right? I think Kelce was 8.9 targets per game. I'm doing this off memory. I think Hill was 8.6. Like, Hill got fed constantly. But I would worry if I'm a Miami fan, he didn't feel like he got enough of a share in that organization's offensive scheme. You're now going to the Dolphins, where Mike McDaniel comes from San Francisco. San Francisco runs the hell out of the football. There's no reason to think that's going to stop any day soon. Why is, do you think McDaniel's all of a sudden going to turn into Air Coryell with Tua? That's not going to happen. Tyreek's going to be doing a lot more of watching them hand the ball off. Now, that doesn't mean that he's not going to get his targets and not going to get his share, because he, believe me, you pay $30 million a year, he's getting the football, and he should. He's a great player. But that offense is going to be fundamentally different. That is not going to be Andy Reid's, we're going to throw the ball 40, 45 times here. That's not happening in Miami. Things are going well. They're within the low of the game. Tua is throwing the ball 25 times. Okay? I would almost guarantee you that Hill's getting less targets here. And I would really guarantee you he's getting less deep ball targets. I forget who said this on Twitter. I want to give them credit. Certainly not my stat. It was out there, though. Last year, nobody threw the ball more than 20 yards in the air more than Patrick Mahomes. Nobody. Tua ranked 36th. Hill's game is going to fundamentally change. Now, he's got more than enough talent to catch a five-yard slant and go 70. We've seen that a million times. But it's going to be different for him. And if he didn't like the fact that there were some games where he was held down a little bit, which, by the way, happens to everybody, he's really going to struggle with that in Miami, where teams are just going to say, well, you don't have another Travis Kelce. Look, I like Jalen Waddle as much as the next guy. He's not the threat Travis Kelce is. Okay, he maybe is the big play threat, but he's not the down-in, down-out threat to Kelce. I mean, Kelce's going to walk into Canton one day. Okay, if you're playing the Dolphins, you're absolutely going to try and take away Tyreek Hill. That's what you're doing. Okay. If you're, let's just say you're Buffalo. If you're the Bills, you're putting Tre'Davious White on Tyreek Hill. And if you have to, you're rolling a safety. You're doing whatever it takes, right? Or you could do the Belichick thing, which is put your number one corner on the number two receiver, which I always love that scheme, right? So you could put White on Waddle, and then you could put a corner, in this case, probably be Elam, the rookie, which is dangerous, on Hill, and then you double with one of the safeties. Point being, look, if you play Kansas City, you always have to pick your poison, right? Like, you're going to double Kelce, you're going to double Hill. Now you're going to double Hill. Just like in Kansas City now, you're going to double Kelce. Kelsey's going to have a lot harder time getting his numbers this year, which is why I think it hurts him more than anything else. But we'll move on. I just think with Hill, a lot of the stuff that was said, like, I get having hurt feelings. You see him, and okay, maybe you want to be there, but it's bizarre. Like, there's just no reason to be upset about the fact that they really, quite honestly, did you a pretty big solid by trading it. They could have been a real pain in the ass about that, and they weren't. All right. Want to move to the nation's capital. They've had some stories the last week. It feels like stories the last 20 years straight. And by the way, thank you again, Terry, for joining me here live. I know at the very beginning had a little bit of a connection issue. I apologize. We've had a couple of these. I don't know if that's because there's been storms in the area or what may be causing that. But I do appreciate everybody sticking with me there for that minute where it was a little choppy. Hopefully it's good now. Look, in Washington, you have the stuff that's been going on with Jack Del Rio the past week, okay? Which, forget your political lean. I mean, it's been a distraction, period. And then you have the Terry McLaurin stuff. Now, I'm going to spend most of these next 15 minutes before we're joined by Ben Heisler, Betsided. I'm going to spend most of it on McLaurin and then a quick vignette on Del Rio. So Terry McLaurin is not at Washington's camp right now, okay? He is willing to hold out. He's in the last year of his rookie contract. McLaurin is a phenomenal talent. He does not get talked about nearly as much as he should from a national perspective because he's been on a team that frankly has not been good most of his career. And so he gets forgotten a little bit. He is one of the 10 best receivers. Okay, and he's young. He's ascending. He's been on teams with no quarterback throughout his entire career, and yet he's gotten it done. Okay, if you want to look, so in 3 years, here are his numbers if you're unfamiliar. Rookie year 2019, 58 catches, 919 yards, 7 touchdowns. 2020, 1,118 yards on 87 receptions, 4 touchdowns. And last year, missed a couple games with injury. 77 catches, 1,053 yards, and 5 touchdowns. Again, no receiver to help pull coverage away. And mediocre to bad quarterback play all the way across the board. And yet Washington has not paid him yet. Look, I've got news for Washington and the Commanders. They're going to pay him. Or somebody else is gonna. But one way or the other, Terry McLaurin's about to get his money. Okay. Washington has a couple choices here. The Commanders can sit there and say, hey, look, we're not gonna pay you this offseason. You're not gonna hold out the whole time because you can't. Okay. And that's true. We're gonna wait it out. We're gonna make play out this year. And then after the season, we'll talk extension. If we have to, we'll tag you. It's an option. They could extend him right now. So I'm going to get into what that would look like in a second. But that's another option. Third option, which I don't think they'll take, but they could theoretically, is trade him. Now, I think of the three, the most unlikely is the latter. I do not think they will trade him. He is too good of a football player in his mid-20s, coming off of the numbers I just reeled off with no quarterback. Okay? I am not a Carson Wentz fan. Carson Wentz is the best quarterback he's played with. And you get Curtis Samuel, who they brought in last year, who is supposedly going to be this number two receiver. He was hurt all of last season. He should be healthy this year. That would be a big boost for them. And, of course, they drafted Jahar Dotson in the first round out of Penn State. So, theoretically, McLaurin's not just going to be on an island anymore. Which is why, if I was Washington, I'd pay him now. Okay? It's only going to get more expensive. He's playing with the best quarterback he's ever played with. He has other weapons around him to pull some coverage, theoretically. I would pay him right now. We have seen the wide receiver market explode. Christian Kirk, 4 years up to $84 million. Okay? Never had 1,000 yards in a season. We just saw Cooper Kupp, obviously a great player, get paid a fortune. 5 years, $110 million. Upwards of $75 million guaranteed, a record. Tyreek Hill, of course, we just talked about. 4 years, $120 million, over $70 million guaranteed. Devontae Adams, similar contract, okay? Hunter Renfro just got paid $18 a year, which I actually think is a bargain, quite honestly. He's an excellent player. Mike's got $20 million a year this offseason. I mean, you're talking about a guy who is going to get paid a ton. By the way, I purposely left out one guy to comp, AJ Brown. A.J. Brown got traded from Tennessee to Philly on the opening night of the draft and immediately got a four-year, $100 million deal, $57 million guaranteed. A.J. Brown is the perfect comp for Terry McLaurin, okay? They're both entering their fourth years. They've both been very productive for each of their first three seasons. It's not like Brown is a Johnny-come-lately. He's been great his whole career. Both have remained relatively healthy, McLaurin more so than Brown. Brown has more touchdowns, 24 to 16, but McLaurin has more receptions and more yards. I think they're very, very comparable players. And I think that if McLaurin were to sign tomorrow, he would want something like 4 and 100 and probably about $60 million guaranteed. Okay? I think that's about where he's going to come in, right at that A.J. Brown number. Usually the guy who signs latter gets a tick more. Okay? I think he gets a tick more. But he's not going to get a ton more, but he's not going to get any less either. I'll tell you that much right now. So you're now in a position, if you're Washington, you either pay that freight or you pay more later or you eventually move him, which would be next offseason. I mean, and if you move him, again, the A.J. Brown comp, right? What did it cost Philadelphia? It cost a first and a future third. I would pay that if I'm a team that needs a receiver. I'll tell you right now, if I was a team like the Packers, I'd trade for him in a heartbeat for a first and a third round pick. No question. I'll tell you right, we've talked about this team a lot. If I'm Kansas City, a first and a third rounder, you have two thirds next year. I'd do it in 2 seconds. Trade for Terry McLaurin. They got the cap space. There are a lot of teams I would throw in that mix and say, yeah, I'd go get Terry McLaurin. Okay. I mean, two-thirds of the league should at least make that phone call. But Washington, like, if you let him walk out the door, not only are you losing your best offensive player by a considerable margin, you're also sending the message, we don't pay our guys. We'll pay all day long to Landon Collins of the world, right? These free agents. We'll pay them a fortune. We won't pay our own guys. We'll pay William Jackson. We'll pay Curtis Samuel, not our guys. That matters in locker rooms. That's a real thing in locker rooms. You talk to players. You talk to GMs around the league. That factors in. Guys think about that kind of stuff. When you don't pay your own, but you're willing to pay outside, it sends a message. You're not going to get rewarded here. They didn't reward Brandon Schreff, who's one of the best guards in football. They let him walk out the door. They didn't reward Kirk Cousins. They let him walk out the door. And they say whatever you want about Kirk Cousins. They've not replaced him. And Kirk Cousins maybe isn't elite. He's a good quarterback, and they have not had a good quarterback since he left. They don't pay their own in Washington. And it's a problem. And if you're not going to, I mean, look, there's been, you know, reported rumors that, hey, you know, Washington maybe doesn't want to get into that high-end part of the market. Well, then they might as well trade him because they're going to have to pay him. I mean, what do you think? Terry McLaurin's taking $15 million a year? It's not going to happen. There's no way that's going to happen. And it shouldn't happen. If I was Terry McLaurin's agent, I'd tell him to go scratch. I'd make $25 million a year, $60 million guaranteed, or don't even talk to me because we will play this out. If I'm McLaurin, I would not hold out in camp because you can't afford it. Mandatory mini camps and everything. That's fine. You make a point. If I'm Terry McLaurin, I would play the year, hope to God I stay healthy. And then I would tell them, don't talk to me. You didn't try to sign me. Don't waste my time. And if you tag me, I'm not signing the tag. And then I can hold as long as I want because I'm not under contract. Then I can play hardball. Then I've got the leverage. And I'm forcing a dysfunctional organization's hand. And I feel pretty good about that. I've talked to many people in the league about Washington over the last couple of years. I wrote a sweeping piece about, at the time, the football team. It might have been before that moniker. And there was a lot of vitriol toward them. Now, to be fair, since that piece, I mean, some things have changed. Bruce Allen is out. Daniel Snyder supposedly has less of a role. But it's not an organization that you look at and say, oh, it's peak function, right? So with McLaurin, I just don't understand. If you're them, why wouldn't you pay him? Like, what else could you possibly want? Is the point of drafting players to have good quality talent on your team, cheap for the first 3 to 4 years, and then after that, for the next 4 or 5 years on a steeper contract? Yeah, is that not the point? Now, it's one thing if you just have so many guys, you got to pick and choose. Washington does not have that problem. Washington can do whatever it wants financially, or at least should be able to, right? I mean, who are they paying that you'd look at and go, that's a blue chip level player? And obviously some guys on the front line, they're going to have to pay here. You know, guys like a Chase Young, that's not precluding them from signing Terry McLaurin. If you don't have a star quarterback, a top 8 guy, let's say in the league, and you have a cap problem, you suck with the cap. Like, I'm always amazed how New Orleans has been pushing money back from since the Roman Empire, which is why their cap situation is such a disaster. But like, how they haven't just decided to eat it a little bit boggles my mind. The Falcons are another team. Now, the Falcons, of course, just traded Matt Ryan. They're eating all kinds of dead money. These teams have bad cap situations and no quarterback. I mean, that's impossible. Now, part of that is because they used to have quarterbacks and they just push money and push money and push money. It's a horrible way to do business over the long haul. It provides you a little bit more of a window in the short term. Washington has no such problem. Carson is not a great quarterback. You should have no problem signing McLaurin, and there's no guaranteed money to his contract going forward. Quickly on Jack Del Rio here. We have 4 minutes, then Ben Heisler, Betside, it's coming on. So, look, with Del Rio, we don't have to go into the whole political sphere of this, okay? There's no point. It's in honestly, where I'm going with this isn't political. But for context, he talked last week, and he mentioned that, you know, January 6th at the Capitol, he called it a dust-up, okay? Obviously downplaying something that was of significance, where, you know, 5 people either directly or indirectly lost their lives out of it. The reason I bring it up, now he ended up putting out a statement afterwards and was fined, and Ron Rivera, the head coach in Washington, has kind of come out and chastised him over it, but also has kept him on staff. I don't have a strong opinion as to whether or not he should be on staff. I know some people feel like he should not be anymore. He should have been fired. Some people feel like he should still be there. He's got a right to say whatever he thinks. Fine. I'm not going to argue either of those sides. What I will say is I did see a report this morning that Del Rio apologized to the team. I think that's meaningful for this reason. I don't care what your political bend is. The job of football coach is to be able to command the room and coach his team, okay? Or in this case, the coach's defense. If you can't do that because you've lost respect in the room, you are no longer an important part of the franchise. In fact, you're a detriment. Del Rio needs to maintain respect in that room. And based off of the way he talked about January 6th and he compared it to the protests following George Floyd's murder in Minnesota, look, that's going to rankle some players. I mean, you saw, if you're on Twitter, you may have saw a lot of players, not even just in Washington, but outside the organization, spoke out. Shelby Harris being one of them. Melvin Gordon being one of them. Okay, or in Harris's case, of course, now in Seattle, formerly of Denver, who had an opinion on it. And there were many who spoke out. And look, that's going to be a topic of conversation. Like, you can't lose the room. If you lose the room, you're done as a coach. You're done. Head coach, coordinator, position coach, doesn't. You are done in the room if you lose the room. That is a serious problem for Del Rio. That defense was supposed to be a top 5 defense last year, and it stunk. He's already, look, let's call it what it is. His ass is already on the line based off of the way that team performed last year defensively. That was supposed to be one of the best defenses in the league, and it was a tire fire, okay? And they underperformed as a team and as a defense. You need, if you're Del Rio, to have a bounce back year, it's a bad way to start the year. It's a bad way to start the year, okay? I don't care what his beliefs are on politics and whatnot, okay? I do think his characterization of January 6th was gross. But the bigger football version issue of this is he needs to keep the room. And that's not helping the situation. All right. Let's bring in Ben Heisler of BetSided. He joins us every single week. He's saving all of us from me having to talk more. And I'm sure bore you even more to death. So, Ben, how you doing? We're without Carm. We can trash him for a half hour.
That sounds like why even prepare for anything if we got that? That's right up our alley. But good to see you, man. You've been holding it down for the last 30 minutes, doing well. A lot of discussion, a lot of things to be able to dive into this week, which is nice.
Yeah, you know, we've been talking a little bit about what has been, I guess, the lead story other than the Deshaun Watson stuff, which I just cannot bring myself to talk about every week. But we talked about Tyreek Hill and his commentary on Mahomes. And then we talked a little bit about Washington and Terry McLaurin and the fact that they can't quite seem to figure out what to do there. I'm curious, and we can go into a whole bunch of different things here, but from a betting perspective, your thoughts on Tyreek Miami. How do you think that plays out? Do you like him to have a huge year there? Do you think he takes a step back because of going from Mahomes to Tua? I mean, where do you fall on some of this stuff?
It's so interesting because Hill will have those games that he kind of complained about where going from, you know, 12 catches and 189 yards to like a 3-43 type of performance.
Right.
You kind of just figure like, okay, there's going to be more attention paid to him. There's going to be different matchups. Like that was always what Mahomes and Reed were doing, right? They were playing into the matchups. And while times like Kelsey probably got more consistent targets and volume, the reality was, is that in the middle of the field, there just weren't enough guys to be able to take him down one-on-one. And it was a more advantageous opportunity to use him. Could the Chiefs have maybe used Tyreek Hill even more effectively? Probably, but it's hard to argue with the results of the last several years, considering where they got him from as a result of him falling in the draft and then moving his way up. Like, I could see a scenario in Miami where Hill is getting possibly more targets than he did in Kansas City, and Tua's numbers, and I saw this from Warren Sharp, actually indicate that on deep passes, he's one of the better throwers in the league. Now, sample size compared to Mahomes, I'm still taking Mahomes every time to throw the ball deep than Tua, and I don't think I'm necessarily breaking news by saying this,
but it
wouldn't surprise me if he has a fine year, but there's a lot of weapons in Miami too, and they're going to run the ball a lot. So I don't think it's reasonable to go ahead and just assume that because Hill's now the de facto number one guy, that the numbers are going to take this massive step in the right direction. Like, he might get targeted a little bit more, but there's still plenty of options in Miami, and they're going to be running probably more often than Kansas City ever was going to do. So I think he'll have a fine season, but I don't think it's going to be anything earth-shattering that maybe he's setting these unfair and unreasonable expectations for himself.
I agree, Ben. I talked about this at the beginning of the show. Look, this is not Kansas City's scheme. They're going to play like San Francisco, and they're going to run the ball, and they're going to want to throw 25 times a game. This is not going to be with Andy Reid and Mahomes where 25 times, I mean, you could do that in a half. And that's the way they want to play. It'd be the same thing. I find it really interesting. I mentioned earlier, and I'll say it one more time. I really do think that if you are a Dolphins fan, the one concern I would have coming out of that podcast is, as you mentioned, he talked about targets and you know how he kind of would vacillate from game to game.
Yeah.
I would be shocked if he gets 159 targets this year, which is what he got last year. They just don't throw the ball that much.
Right.
There is no world where I think he's getting 160-plus targets. And as much as I like Jaylen Waddle, and I like him a lot, you're not going to pull coverage from Hill to take away Jaylen Waddle. You're just not going to do that. Where with Kelsey, at times you would do that. You would double Kelsey, depending on the down, depending on the situation, depending on your defensive schematics and the players you have on defense. I think it's going to be really interesting. I don't know if there's even over-unders out yet for like catches and yards and all that stuff. I have no idea if that's out this early, but Hill's a fascinating one, man, because you really have to think at some point you're like, even if he's targeted a lot by Miami standards, it's probably not going to be as much as he would have been targeted in Kansas City.
No doubt. I mean, it's still back-to-back, you know, plus 1,200-yard receiving seasons. You know, the last 2 years before 2021, he averaged just under 15 yards per catch.
Yep.
So again, like deep downfield where you can use him so effectively, which Mahomes is able to do. Also in a lot of those short screens, quick slants, like Dolphins have a couple guys that can be used very effectively there. But you're right. It's a different scheme. It's a different perspective. And Mike McDaniel, there's still a lot of unknown, even though the system that he was working with in San Francisco was a very effective one. You know, I don't want to come on the show and say, well, you know, it was Kyle Shanahan's system and Mike McDaniel was running. Like, he got right. the Miami job in likely because of how he took that scheme and used it very effectively and was a solid play caller in the mix. I'm not like here to diminish his credentials, but you also know what you're going to get from the Kansas City offense that you just don't know in Miami. So there's reason to be optimistic, but it's just not going to be the same. And for him to have those expectations now that it's been a little bit less consistent, like I don't know what Tyreek Hill wants. That's kind of what I'm seeing here. Is like, do you want to go from a team where you were getting the ball a ton, maybe just not as consistently as you would like, to be right. the guy each and every week? Maybe that's what he wants. And maybe he feels like that's what's going to help him earn even more money over the course of his career. But you can't tell me that you're going to Miami from Kansas City, putting yourself in a better, more advantageous spot to win a championship. The answer is not there. No. The answer is no.
Oh, look, let's call it what it is. And I have no problem with any player who does this, but you went there for one reason. You went there for money, which is fine. That's fine. You got a finite career. Go get paid. You got your ring. But let's not pretend it's for any other reason. I mean, that it's the same reason why when guys sign a free agency with some team that's terrible, and it's like, what, for the money. You went there. It's why everybody goes sometimes in Jacksonville. You got paid. And there's no state income tax. That's why you went to Jacksonville.
Christian Kirk got, you know, $55 million from a contender, or $74 million from Jacksonville. Guess where he's going?
Of course.
You found out.
And it's where he should go. But, like, come on. Like, what? You get these people. Like, every once in a while, you're getting athletes really honest about it. And they're like, yeah, listen, it was the biggest offer. I have respect for that guy. Like, just say it. It's all the truth. By the way, one thing I wanted to touch on just came down the wire. So, Carm not doing his job as per usual, could have reported this. So Robert Quinn is not with the Bears currently. He is working out on his own. Ian Rapoport, by the way, was the one who tweeted this out. Didn't say in the tweet if it was a mutual thing, but it doesn't sound like a holdout considering Quinn has 3 years left on his deal for a ton of money. So it seems more like you're 32 years old and we would like to trade you because we're trying to rebuild this team. So Robert Quinn, as I mentioned, is 32. He's got a cap hit of $17 million, 17.1 to be exact, 18.2 the following 24. Now, 2024 is not really going to happen. I mean, his dead cap that year is 4.2. No team's paying him that unless he's unbelievable for his age 35 season. However, for the next 2 years, like this year, obviously, you would pay him if you traded for him. The following year, it's about split his dead money and his cap savings at $18.2 million. I don't know about you. That is a fascinating situation. He had 18.5 sacks last season on a team where a lot of times the opponent was running the ball because they were winning. Now, the year prior to that, he had 2.5. And then the year prior to that, he had 11.5. So two of the last 3 years, he's been fantastic. Last year, of course, a career year. He's 32. He's not cheap, but he plays a premium position. I would think there'd be a market, even at this late stage, for Robert Quinn, despite the contract and the age.
Can I tell you something about Robert Quinn? I wanted him to be the guy that the Bears tried to move this offseason, not Khalil Mack. Because I thought that you're trading Mack at his lowest possible value.
Yeah.
Mack's younger, still has a higher upside for sure than Quinn, even though Quinn... Listen, the Bears are one of those teams where you know that you haven't had much success at the quarterback position, but defensively and at the running back spot, you know that that is a legacy team. And the fact that Robert Quinn came in and surpassed Richard Dent for the team's all-time leader in sacks, that's a big deal. And so that's absolutely somebody under a new regime, under a rebuilding year, that you should absolutely move. And to Ryan Poles' credit, And I still am buying into Poles' plan, even though Justin Fields really doesn't have anybody to throw to. I believe in his long-term vision for success in Chicago. But he's not going to kill Quinn's trade value by saying, yeah, you know, we think it might be best for, you know, Robert to find a position where he can contend right away, because then immediately you lower your possible trade value for what you can get back. He said all the right things. We feel like Robert and Matt Eberflus' system is going to be a really good fit. We think that, you know, what he can teach to a lot of our young guys is going to be monumental and impactful. But of course they're trying to trade him. Like, it wouldn't be in the best interest of the Bears long-term for them not to move on from him.
Right.
You know, I'm trying to think of the team that has the cap space to be able to take that contract on. And the thing is, that year in Chicago, that first year, he just was never healthy. Like, I know he played the amount of games, but like, he wasn't healthy at all. Nicked up throughout the course of the season, never really got it going. Last year he was, and the year before going into free agency, he was healthy as well.
Right.
So I don't know, that Giants have some cap space. Maybe they feel like at some point that's a team where he can go on, make a difference for them. But again, they're still in a rebuilding year. Maybe you look at a team like Dallas, if they have, you know, a decent amount of cap space.
They lost Gregory.
You know, I just don't know where exactly the fit is right now for them to be able to take on that type of money. But if you're asking me whether or not the Bears should move on from it, or if they're planning to, I think the answer is unequivocally yes.
Yeah.
Poles can't come out and say it.
No, of course. And they should, because they're in a full-blown rebuild. I mean, by the time they're good, Robert Quinn's going to be doing analyst work. As Lucas S. points out, and I thank him as the capologist here on Stacking the Box. And I should have thought about this, but I had it up on my phone and didn't think about it like a dope. So a team that trades for Quinn, actually, as Lucas points out correctly, they would inherit zero dead money. That would not be going to them. They would just pay base salary, which, again, as Lucas points out, here is 12.9, 14 million, and 13 million. That's a nice deal. I mean, you're basically going year to that point, and you can either move on or always restructure the contract and put in guarantees for Quinn and lower the overall number. So it is advantageous. I wonder if you're the Bears, would you eat some of that money, you know, especially this year, as you're in a rebuild anyway, but to get a better pick out of it? You know, that way you could get more teams in on it by saying, hey, look, we'll eat half his contract this year. We'll take half the money. You know, kind of like last year we saw the Broncos do with Von Miller. You know, they ate a lot of that money for the Rams, but they got better picks out of it.
Yeah, second round pick, right?
Second and third. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they got a great deal out of it. And so the Rams, they won a Super Bowl. So it worked out for both sides. I'll tell you the
team. And to that point, Matt, just really quickly.
Go ahead.
Do you know what team is going to be by far and away the leader in cap space in 2023?
I don't. I do not have the list in front of me.
Chicago Bears.
Of course. Yeah.
Bears are going to have upwards of 90. Yeah, they're going to have upwards of 90 million, according to Spotrac right now. Could be even as much as 100 if they move some of these other contracts around. So you can take on a lot of that money if you need to go ahead and get that pick. Yep. So it would be advantageous if that's the route that they decide to go here.
Yes, and thanks to Lucas for making sure I'm on my point. I'm on point here. But you know when I'm doing over the cap on my phone, it doesn't end well. So I appreciate the support. Look. I'll tell you one team, right or wrong, that's going to be linked to him a lot is Kansas City, because Poles is from Kansas City and the Chiefs need edge. The Chiefs need edge rush. I mean, and they've got 12 picks next year. Like, they're going to be linked to him. Now, keep in mind, the Chiefs drafted Carl Loftus, and they, look, from my understanding, is they are really, really high on him after seeing the early returns. Now, of course, it's OTAs. Like, I'm not trying to pump him up anymore or any, you know, but I'm just, look, they're happy with the pick. Let's put it that way. They're very happy they got him to begin with. But they also have Frank Clark, who is expensive, but I don't know that would preclude the Chiefs from going out and getting Robert Quinn if they could do it. Like, the Chiefs this year have some cap space because they didn't move on Hill or didn't sign him, moved him instead. So they have some cap space now into the future. Now, I don't know. Look, they've gotten younger and more athletic defensively. I don't know that Quinn fits that, years old. Because, as Luke points out here, you don't have dead money going forward. you could always just say, look, we're going to acquire him. And if it works out great, cool. We'll go to next year with him. And then he replaces Frank Clark. If it doesn't work out, cut him. And we get the cap space and we move on for whatever's going to, you know, I mean, look, you're not going to be trading a first round pick for Robert Quinn. At this point, you're probably talking a mid round pick. You know, what was really fascinating, the Chiefs have an extra third round pick as a compensatory pick for Ryan Poles going to Chicago. Would the Chiefs trade the compensatory pick that they got because of Ryan Poles to Ryan Poles?
It would make sense. Here's the other thing too. I continue to think about this, not just from the Robert Quinn market, but also for the quarterback market as Baker and Jimmy G continue to just sort of wallow in the wind with a clear indication that both of these teams are going to be moving on from these guys.
Yeah.
But at this point, you would have to assume that those teams are holding out until somebody goes down with a training camp injury in the first few weeks, right? Like that's the only rationale here. And then all of a sudden that increases their trade value. Not going to be to the point where, you know, we saw Sam Bradford get moved for a first round pick for the Eagles a handful of years ago. I mean, that's not going to happen again, but it does, especially for a contending team, knowing that you want to get somebody in as soon as possible, it does increase that value and the sense of urgency when you know that the season is just around the corner. Do you want to make sure you get that guy as early as possible? And for the Bears, it's also advantageous to move on in the training camp period, because if Robert Quinn goes and tears his Achilles in the first game of the season, then you're screwed either way. So a deal's going to get done here. I'm almost positive of it. I think they're just waiting for the most opportunistic time to move on from him. And then, you know, they're not rooting for anybody to get hurt, but they're rooting for someone to get hurt.
I mean, let's call it what it is. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure John Lynch right now is lighting candles every night for some quarterback to, you know, be out for 3 months. I mean, that's just the way, look, that's the NFL. It's the truth. They're, if you're the Niners, you're sitting there with Jimmy Garoppolo and you're going, all right, if somebody gets hurt in a preseason game, that's a lot of leverage for us. And the flip side of that is, if nobody gets hurt in the preseason, they're screwed.
Yeah.
Let's move to that quick, because I actually wanted to talk about that in the opening, and then I decided to go a different direction. I figured I'd save for another week. But so the 49ers right now are sitting there. They've obviously got Lance. They've got Garoppolo. Garoppolo's rehabbing off of the shoulder. He hasn't been at OTAs or anything. No reason to be. But should be ready for training camp. If he's still with the Niners, do you see them going with Garoppolo or Lance to start? Like, just first day of camp, assuming Garoppolo's fully healthy. Rep one with the first team. Is it with the kid or is it with Garoppolo?
I think you have to go with Lance if your plan has been to move on from Garoppolo over the course of the offseason. Maybe it's a bad example, but this is sort of the first thing that comes to mind. So, you know, in Chicago, Justin Fields is now the number one clear starter. He was not at the beginning of his rookie season last year. But the issue for Chicago was, in their mind, they still thought they had to contend because it was a make or break year. So Fields didn't get the reps that he needed with any of the ones. He comes in week three, gets sacked 9 times by the Browns, never establishes any sort of a rapport with Allen Robinson. And the whole season he's playing from behind. If the objective of the 49ers is to be a contender with Trey Lance as your quarterback, and that's been the plan this entire offseason, and you know that these front offices and coaching staffs have a plan of who should be at the top of the depth chart, you have to go with that guy. Because if all of a sudden now you say Lance is the guy and then you bench him for no reason, you lose an opportunity for a full year of experience under a guy that's still in year two of a rookie contract that needs the reps to move forward so you can actually get a real quality sense of analysis of what this guy can be, make a determination of whether or not down the road you're going to want to extend that rookie deal. If you bench him for Garoppolo, for him not doing anything wrong, that's a confidence killer. And listen, these are grown men. These are professional athletes. They can certainly rebound and bounce back at any time, but why take away from an opportunity to develop the guy that you believe is the long-term answer at that position just because Garoppolo is there. Like, if anything, it's an indication that if they don't move on from him, he is a perfect, ready-made, tailor-made replacement in the events that Lance were to go down. He can handle that, in theory, better than Lance, of going from being the starter, having waited his turn, to then going back to the bench for him not doing anything wrong. So I think it has to be Lance.
No, I'm with you. I do too. Look, you traded 3 first-round picks for him. Like, he's not ready to usurp Jimmy Garoppolo with this problem. It's an indication that he is not very good. And it's been interesting. You know, there have been like various reports sprinkled in throughout the offseason, like the Niners don't love what they see. And then like right away, immediately it comes in. No, they love what they see. Like, I'm very interested to actually watch him and get an idea of what we're seeing. I don't care about last year where he played, you know, spot duty here. I actually want to see him play consistent snaps. What do you have in this kid? You better have something pretty damn good for 3 first-round picks. And I just think with the Niners, like, I give Shanahan a lot of credit for, in the last 3 years, twice getting to the NFC title game, once getting to a Super Bowl. With a quarterback who I think everybody can agree upon is pretty maxed out as an average player. I don't think Garoppolo is ever going to be more than that. He is who he is. He's in his 30s at this juncture. Look, the Niners have been able to win a lot of football games with a quarterback who you have to basically scheme around. You know, I mean, you go look at that NFC title game. If Jaquaski Tart catches that arm punt from Stafford, how different is the world today? Okay. The Niners are going to the Super Bowl. They're playing the Bengals. The Bengals might be Super Bowl champs right now, for all we know. Okay. But I think you have to, at some point here, if you're the Niners, say, listen, we're going to play Lance. And if he's great, then awesome. Then our ceiling is through the roof and we can win the Super Bowl. If he's not and he's terrible, well, then we had to find that out. Yep. But we were never going anywhere beyond where we've gone with Jimmy Garoppolo. We're just not – like, that Super Bowl year, everything went right for the Niners that year. Everything. They had a year where a lot of guys who have been injury-riddled stayed healthy. They had a great around him. They had the best defense in the league. They rode what was a pretty weak NFC. They played the Vikings and the Packers in the playoffs. And the Packers, they had a great team. They killed both of them. And look, for 53 minutes, everything went right. And then Mahomes happened, and it is what it is, and they fell short. But I don't know that you can count on all that happening again. Even last year in the playoffs. I mean, they played Dallas, who I'm not taking it away from the Niners. The Niners deserve to win that game. But Dallas just self-destructed in that game. Took a million penalties. The management of that game by McCarthy was ridiculous. Then the playoff game in Green Bay, Garoppolo couldn't get a yard in that game. They won the game because they blocked the punt. And that's why they won that game. So I just think ultimately, if you're the Niners, you have to move on. And if you're not better with Lance, that's a huge problem. But you might as well go for the upside than go with the same old, and win 10 games. And okay, you're good, but you're not really competing for a Super Bowl unless every single star aligns.
You might have a better read on this than I do, because there were conflicting reports that 49ers front office and Shanahan may not have been in agreement on whether or not they thought Lance was the guy. There are some conflicting reports that maybe Jones would have been a better fit for this offense, for this team at this point, as a long-term answer. I don't know what the actual result is. I do know that with Lance's skill set, the ceiling is it's objectively higher, and I don't think that that's saying much for debate. But my philosophy is that if you thought you were a contending team, and at number three in the draft, you trade up 3 first-round picks to get the quarterback of the future, that's an indictment on your starting quarterback. It has to be. Like, you can't look at it from another approach and say, like, well, you know, we're just trying to make sure that, you know, long-term, eventually, if we believe we're going to stay in a championship window or rebuild and restart over and get back to a championship window, that we have our guy long-term. If you think you're in a championship window right now, the quarterback matters. And they thought they needed more at that position. So to start Garoppolo at this point, would go against that entire philosophy. I get 1 year. 1 year makes sense for a guy that played at North Dakota State that's incredibly raw, that's oozing with potential, and you want to develop in a fairly complex system.
Yeah,
I get that. But the notion that they would go into this season just because they hadn't been able to trade Garoppolo and start him would be malpractice on the point of the 49ers.
Right. And at some point, too, I mean, Lance is going to become a rusty hinge. I mean, the guy's played one game in 2 years in North Dakota State because of COVID and everything else. And, you know, between being benched last year, I mean, he's barely played the last couple of years. So at some point, you got to get him out there. By the way, as we're doing this, we're going to wrap up here in a few minutes. Deshaun Watson is speaking to the media in Cleveland live and in color. So that if he says anything of note, we'll pass that along. Right now, it's mostly just been the standards, and I want to clear my name, and I'm not questions because I can't, so on and so forth. Nothing has been said that is a bombshell, but he is speaking for the first time since he was introduced at a press conference in Cleveland, and so that is noteworthy, just that alone. But anyway, look, to finish up on the Lance Garoppolo thing, I do feel like the Niners have to roll with him. I mean, you just have too much invested. You know, and I know some people will say, and I've had people say this to me, well, what about Jordan Love? Yeah, Jordan Love's behind Aaron Rodgers. It's different. Aaron Rodgers is a hell of a lot better of a player. And by the way, that pick for the Packers is a train wreck. It's one pick, not three.
Yes. Having said that, though, Love is another name that isn't being in the same type of conversation as Baker and Jimmy for potential moves this offseason for a team that could, like if you're maybe Atlanta's an interesting spot because you have Mariota, you kind of know what he is at this point. Yep. Yes, you drafted Ridder, but I don't know. Like, if you're a team that's got plenty of cap space and you want to at least consider the possibility of what Love could be, to me, like a rebuilding team makes sense to just roll the dice on somebody with his talent.
Yeah.
You haven't seen much of it. And the further he just waits and waits and waits, I don't know if it necessarily helps his trade value for Green Bay at this point.
I'm with you. I'll give you another one. Same division, Carolina. What the hell do you have to lose if you're Carolina?
Yeah.
I mean, you have, I got news for the Panthers. Let me save them time. Sam Darnold is not the answer. Okay. Let me just save you all the words we're going to have to listen to in August. Oh, you know, I think this is his year. He stinks. I can save all the time in the world. I'm with you.
Who did they take in the draft? Did they take Corral out of Ole Miss?
They took Corral in the third. They traded back into the draft because they're dysfunctional. And they took Matt Corral, which maybe Matt Corral ends up being Joe Montana. I highly doubt it. But yes, they took Matt Corral. And then, of course, Willis went to Tennessee. Well, I actually think that was a great pick by Tennessee.
Yeah,
I agree with that. There.
I do.
All right.
There's a lot to be considered.
There is. A few quick questions in the chat that I wanted to hit with us. Joshua asks us, since Orlando Brown hasn't signed his franchise tag, he's not on the cap right now, correct? No, he is on the cap. Franchise tag a player, they're not on the cap, it's a cap hold. So he is on the cap. Anytime a player is tagged, even signed or unsigned, and by the way, Orlando Brown has signed his tag, but if you haven't, that number is against the cap. Jacob asks, who has more to lose preseason, Lance or Jimmy G? I don't know about you, Heis. I think the answer's got to be Lance. I don't think Jimmy G has anything to lose at this point. He's getting paid either way. Lance has got to prove himself.
Yeah, I think without question, because if he goes out and he struggles in the early portion of the season and Garoppolo, for whatever reason, is still on the roster, then yeah, you're going to get calls to go with the old reliable option that you know you can win, like you said, 10 or 11 games with, as opposed to the upside play. So I do think it's an opportunity for Lance to have to step up. Yes, I do believe there's more pressure on him.
All right, then Gonzo, our guy who's around all the time, asks, who finishes last in the NFC North? Is it the Bears or the Lions? I know this is home to you, Heis. And I'm sure Carm would be here irate right now at this question. I will say quickly, I think it's going to be Chicago, because I think Chicago is purposely just absolutely ripping this thing down to the studs. I actually think Detroit's a little better than people think they are. Like, I think the Lions could win six games and be feisty enough to be competitive in like 10 or 11 of them. So I'll say Chicago. I think Chicago's the worst team in the division.
It's going to be close. Like the idea for Chicago to go to Detroit and play Detroit twice a year is two automatic wins is no longer the case.
Right.
It just sort of depends on, you know, whether or not Goff is actually going to show up for a few games a year, one of them being against Chicago. They both probably finish with like 5 or 6 wins. I'll say Chicago by a game, and they're both several games under 500.
Is better or finishes worse?
I think Chicago finishes with a slightly better record, and I think part of the reason is you now have a coaching staff that I believe is designing an actual offensive system that's going to help out Justin Fields immensely. Now, does he have talent to throw to? Not really. I mean, Kmet could be taking a nice step in the right direction. Mooney could be a very solid wide receiver. He's not a one, but I think a very good wide receiver. And you actually aren't going to get him killed. So maybe there's the argument that says, based off like quality coaching, Fields could take a solid step in the right direction. But they're reeking of a lack of talent. And Detroit probably has more talent than Chicago right now. So maybe it is Detroit. They're both probably going to win like 5-6 games.
They both stink.
Chicago give them a slight edge unless they completely rip the shreds off.
Okay. All right. What's going on in your life? Normally Carm asks me this, but I'll ask you, what's going on in life? Aren't you going on vacation soon?
I am. Yeah. We're trying to figure out a way to make sure that nobody in the house gets sick, because my wife and I, for our 5-year anniversary, we're going to go out to the Canadian Rockies for a week. Beautiful. We were going to do this trip summer of 2020, but then the world shut down. So we pushed it back for, you know, we thought we were going to do it next year and then ended up having a kid. Pushed it back another year. And we were supposed to take a few, you know, little mini family vacations in January. That got pushed back to February. COVID scares both of those times. So, Verderam, we might have to go on and wear hazmat suits out in public. I might have to, you know, pick up my kid from camp in a full looking like Walter White in Breaking Bad. Yeah. You know, about to go on a cook, and that's fine. We need to go on this trip. We have been waiting for it for a long time. Do a bunch of hiking while we're out there. It's supposed to be just absolutely insanely gorgeous. Spend a day or two in Calgary and Banff. Should be great, assuming that all of us can get there in one piece. What about you?
That sounds great. I hope it works out for you. When are you supposed to leave?
Supposed to leave last Tuesday in June. So we got to survive the next week, and then hopefully be on our way.
And are the kids going with you, or is it just two of you?
No.
That's key. Yeah, leave the kids to their own devices. Hell with
yes.
Have the neighbor check in and throw some meat inside the house
for a few days, and then my in-laws, which are in the Kansas City area, will watch them the rest of the way.
Good for you. That's how you do it. I'll tell you right now, I got a 2-month-old, and if I could get away on vacation, I just have the neighbor throw like a hamburger inside and let her fend for herself. I look forward to somebody calling the feds after this. So the important thing, the really important thing that we got to close on, we made a bet with Carm about the NBA finals.
That's right.
We took the Warriors. He took the Celtics. The Warriors blew game one, and Carm started talking all kinds of shit on Twitter after game one. Now that fraud dope is down 3-2 in the series. Okay. Steph Curry looked like me last night shooting threes. He was 0-for-9. He doesn't hit any of them. Tatum actually decided to play basketball, sort of, kind of. And yet the Celtics lose by double digits. Now they have to go home and win just a force game 7 in Golden State. I don't know about you. The standing bet is Carm would have to buy each of us dinner. I am going to tell Carm that I want a full-blown steak dinner at Ruth Chris. I am going to make this as expensive as humanly possible on Carm if the Warriors can get one more win here.
I don't blame you. That is a strong play by you. I mean, you can go Ruth's Chris. You can go Morton's. You might even try to get out to Chicago and see if they'll do the full Gibson's experience. Chicago. I mean, you got plenty of options to choose from in my former neck of the woods in Chicago. Honestly, if Carm sends me some Al's or Portillo's, which I can't find in the Kansas City area, you can get plenty of good beef. You just can't get the good Italian beef, right, with the good peppers and the jardinera. I'll take that. I'll also take a few Lou's pizzas that you can send in dry ice.
Yep. Okay?
Not something you can find here. So I think by the time that all gets packaged up, it might be the same price as a Ruth's Chris dinner. You never know. But yesterday was one of those days where, like, all these trends that aren't supposed to happen. Yesterday was the first time in Steph Curry's career in the postseason, 127 games, that he has not made a three-pointer. He had nine other games where he has made at least one. That was the first time ever where he goes 0-for, and they still get blown out and lose by 10. It's remarkable. And it was also the first time in the playoffs and in the last 2+ months that the Celtics have lost back-to-back games.
Yeah.
So all sorts of wild trends going at it. It's part of the reason that the odds makers have the Celtics as 4-point favorites for Thursday night. So I see it going 7 games.
So
it's been a great series, even though the games at the end haven't been as close as maybe you would like. But from drama perspective and the series likely going 7, I think it's been a very quality and the right NBA Finals matchup for this season.
It's been very good. It's been very compelling. And it's nice to have new blood. Obviously, the Warriors have been there many times, but they haven't been the last couple of years. The Celtics have not been there in a long time, which, as a Knicks fan, I hope they don't come back for another 80 years. But it's been fun to watch. I will say this. That game felt like last night, as I was watching it in real time, I thought to myself, the Celtics better win this game. Because the Warriors could not be worse. Curry's having an awful game. Everybody and their mother's in foul trouble. You better win this game because you're not going to get it again. And they couldn't do it. The odds are, in my mind, Curry in one of these last two games, if not both of them, is going to have one of his like 40-point explosions, and that's probably good night. Tatum couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat this series. You just cannot hit a shot. I don't know what is with him when he's in the paint. Like, he just can't score. It's bizarre. It reminds me of Julius Randle last year in the playoffs. Where, like, Julius Randle just couldn't hit anything. You're like, what is happening? You're huge. Just go to the basket. Like, it's very weird. And then you know, as our producer Sean mentions in the chat here, Andrew Wiggins finally living up to his potential. The funny thing with Wiggins last night, who was great, best player on the court. He couldn't hit a shot from outside. Like, there were multiple times he missed the rim from downtown, but anything inside the arc, he was basically Julius Irving. Like, it was just everything at the basket. So, look, the point is, the important point of this is, if the Warriors can win one more game, I will do everything I can to make sure Carm has to take out a loan to lose this bet. I will do anything possible to screw Carm over. I'm involved. So, I would have just said Portillo's was fine because I love Portillo's, but now, because of his smack talk, I want a porterhouse, and it's got to be top of the line, and then we're going to get a whole bunch of sides to go with it and really screw him over, make it count.
So you're not concerned now that after he talked all that shit, you're bringing up the tab before the series is over?
I have concerns about this, but I feel like, you know, for the sake of content, it's got to be said now.
Okay, that's fair.
So I do have concerns. I will leave it on this note as we get ready. Of course, I'm a huge hockey fan. The Stanley Cup Final begins tomorrow. By the way, for the love of God, it is final, not finals. The Stanley Cup Final begins Tampa and Colorado. I am psyched. That is a great series. Colorado, probably the best team in hockey all year. Tampa Bay looking for its third straight Stanley Cup. Unbelievable. No team has done that since the Oilers, or excuse me, since the Islanders before the Oilers in the 1980s when they ran off 4 in a row. The Oilers never did it, actually. They won 4 in 5 years. I cannot wait. A lot of speed. And look, I am happy for the Lightning because they took out the Rangers, who, as someone who grew up in New York but is not a Rangers fan, is a Devils fan. Thank you to the Lightning for taking out the trash. I could not deal with it. The Devils suck enough. Okay, I don't need the Rangers. It's kind of how I feel about the Celtics. Like, I'm a Knicks fan. It's enough crap for me. I don't need the Celtics on top of that winning the championship. So, I can't wait. That should be a great final. If you are a casual fan or you maybe want to get into the sport more, watch that series. That will be hockey at its finest. Entertaining, up and down, a lot of goal scorers, great defensemen. I can't wait. And by the way, my pick, although my best friend is a Colorado Avalanche fan, has been his whole life, my pick is the Lightning in six. I think they will find a way to get it done. That team just knows how to win.
That might be a profitable enterprise for you, because right now at WinBet, they initially, this is kind of nuts, they listed the Lightning as 2-1 underdogs to win the series, and
no way,
immediately just got crushed. No, moved the lineup. Last I've seen was the Lightning at plus 155. So that, okay, it moved up a sizable amount from plus 200 to plus 155. Yeah. I'm with you. They've had a much tougher path to get to the Stanley Cup final compared to Colorado, who,
yes,
I suppose St. Louis is a halfway decent team, but it's nowhere near the type of teams that Tampa had to knock out along the way. The Panthers were actually the number one team in hockey, yeah, this year. Number one offense by a wide margin, a historic offense. And Vasilevsky and the rest of that Lightning defense limited them to 3 stinking goals in 4 games. Just completely took them out of it. So they've been impressive. And if they get this series to a point where there's an elimination game on their side, Andrei Vasilevsky, their goaltender, is insane. The numbers are at a historic pace for how good Tampa and Vasilevsky has been in those moments. So if you're Colorado, you better hope that you get off to a early lead and just try to hang on for dear life, because you do not want Tampa up in the series, especially with the other side facing elimination.
Well, look, we're running late on it. We got to go, and I'll leave it at this. But I will say that is the reason I am picking them, other than the fact they're so experienced. Vasilevsky, I believe that the best goaltender ever is right over my shoulder in Martin Brodeur. Okay, as a Devils fan, yes, I am biased, but he holds just about every record that matters. Vasilevsky reminds me of him in the sense, if they get a lead in a big game, it almost feels like a titanic struggle just to tie it. Like, it just is so hard. And you mentioned Vasilevsky's numbers. In their last 8 games where they've had a shot to close out a series, he's given up 2 goals total. Amazing. Total. Like, you just can't score. You can't get by him. I mean, the Rangers, if anybody watched that game 6, my God, the only reason they scored, they got in a power play. They did nothing the entire rest of the game. And of course, there's a lot of credit to Tampa's defense, just like back in the day, Jersey's defense was amazing. But Vasilevsky's a brick wall. I like Darcy Kemper as a goaltender in Colorado. He's fine. He is not Andrei Vasilevsky. Like, there are going to be a couple games in this series where Colorado loses because he just can't score, despite how talented they are. I always believe in the goaltender. And you mentioned the path, but Colorado has faced one tomato can after the next in net. Okay. St. Louis, Bennington got hurt early in the series. Mike Smith is terrible. I cannot remember for the life of me who they even played in the first round. Nashville, who they killed. Okay. Vasilevsky is a step up in class, to say the least. For my buddy back home, I hope Colorado takes it for him. But I got to be honest, I think the Lightning are the team that I can't pick against them. I cannot pick against that team when they have a shot to win a cup. They haven't lost in years.
Yeah, and don't forget Kadri for Colorado, probably going to be missing this series after taking a pretty serious hit. And that was one of their better goal scorers over the course of the playoffs. Yep. So that's a big loss for them, but yeah, they're still big favorites. I'm telling you though, I'm with you on Tampa. Like, the combination of goaltending with really good defensive play and being able to just take out your biggest strength, kind of like how we always talked about the Patriots on defense. Like, they're going to take away the thing you do best offensively for the rest of the series. You're going to have to figure it out. That's what Tampa Bay has done. You know, after they adjusted against the Rangers, they lost 4 straight and they were done. They couldn't score the rest of the way.
Hey, you know what? Watching, and we really will wrap, but watching game 6, I mean, the Lightning are up 1-0 the whole game. They give up a goal with like 5 or 6 minutes left in the third period. You're like, wow, okay, you know, game 7's at the Garden if the Rangers can find a way to score again. The Lightning scored 21 seconds later. And it was one of those things that when it happened, you're like, this game's over. They're just, they're not losing this game. But anyway, I cannot wait. We got, look, we got Stanley Cup Final Game 1 on Wednesday, NBA Finals on Thursday, Game 6 back in Boston. Hopefully we wrap that and we get a nice steak dinner out of it. You get whatever you want, from, you know, some Lumals, whatever it is from Chicago. Until then, until next week, well, we will know one way or the other who won this series and who won this bet, which, of course, is the reason to tune in. We will be back. Carm will be back. Heiss will be back. I'll be here, of course. Thank you so much for joining us today. Everybody who was in the chat, really appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed the show. For Ben Heisler, I'm Matt Verderam. Thanks for listening to Stack the Box. We'll see you again next week.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.